We're holding on Tzaddik Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Now that we talked about how a ganav or gazlan is acquiring whatever he stole with shinui to it, as we discussed in the Mishnah and in the Gemara on it. So now let's talk about similarly a shinui as far as where it's not a ganav or a gazlan, but rather a craftsman. So the Mishnah says, "Nosan la'umnin la'sakin." If you gave something to a craftsman to fix, which we'll see in the Gemara, are we talking about, in other words, a keli? So it'll mean, as we'll see in the Gemara, it means that he gave him wood to make a keli, v'kukulu, and they messed it up, and they made a bad keli. Chayovin l'shalim, then they have to pay the value of the keli. Earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos discusses that it would be even if they did it b'shogeg. Okay, we learned earlier in the Masechta, odam mu'ad la'olam, so it would be an odam amazik. Then you have an opinion of the Ramban who says that it's really because they're a shomer. Anyway, whatever the case, they're chayiv to pay. Similarly, nosan l'chorash shidah tevo migdol. Similarly, if a person gave to a carpenter a shidah tevo or mig a shidah tevo or migdol to fix. These are various kinds of wooden kalim. Rashi describes that a shida is a carriage, like the kind that women would ride around in Rashi's times. So the shida would be the passenger compartment of that, and then teva would be a box, and migdol would be a cabinet or a closet or something like that. And basically that's what they mean according to all the mafoshim, although there are slight differences between them. Whatever the case, it's a wooden keli that he gave to this carpenter to fix. L'sakin, he gave it to them to fix the kilkol, and they wound it. Chayev l'shalom, then again, the carpenter is going to be chayev to pay for the keli. We're going to see in the Gemara why we need both cases, why we need to say when he gave him wood to make a keli, as well as when he gave him the existing keli to fix. Similarly, v'habanai shekibol olav lister as a kosel. What happens if a builder has taken on a contract to tear down a wall, v'shiber ha'avonim, and in the course of tearing down the wall, he broke the stones? Now his responsibility is to take apart the wall and have the stones remain intact so they can reuse them in another building. So here he broke them. Osha he zikon, or he damaged the stones. Chayev l'shalom, then also he's chayev to pay for the same reason as before. And here actually you have different gusos about whether the word is v'hizikon, whether the word shehizikon, which means that he damaged the stones, or shehizik means that he caused nezik. In other words, that, for example, he knocked down a stone onto a person or an animal or whatever and damaged it. In the printed Mishnayos, in fact, you have the Gyusa Shehizik. And some Mephoshim have that Gyusa as well, and they say that in that case it would mean that not that he damaged the stone, but rather that with the stone he damaged something else. On the other hand, again, the Gyusa we have over here, Shehizikon, means that he damaged the stones. Tiferes Yisrael on Mishnayos points out also that even if we have the Gyusa Shehizik, it means the same thing. So Chayev L'Shalom, so he's Chayev to pay. What happens if he was tearing down the wall, he was banging at the wall to tear it down on one side, and a stone fell off from a different side? So you could have, for example, it was a thick wall and a stone got dislodged on the other side, even though his banging on one side shouldn't have done it. Could be that it's a long wall, whatever the case, the point is. So Potter, then he's going to be Potter because, then he's going to be Potter because not a direct thing. It's a grummer thing. The im machmas hamaka, but if it was directly because of the blow, so in other words, that he hit with a sledgehammer on one side and it actually dislodged a stone directly on the other side, chayev, then he would be chayev because that's actually koichoy, that's actually directly from his blow, and therefore that would be like we learned earlier in Masechta, that would be like chitzav, that would be like shooting an arrow. And therefore he'd be chayev. So if it had fallen not directly when he was banging, but afterwards, that would be koyach koychoy, and then he would be potter on that. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Asi, in the first part of the Mishnah, when we said, we're talking about, you gave a craftsman, now actually this is the second case of the Mishnah. First we said you gave something to a craftsman to fix, and he damaged it, then he's chayev. Now we didn't specify in the Mishnah whether we mean an existing keli that he's going to be fixing, or whether we mean a new keli that you wanted to build for you. But then in the second case of the Mishnah, it was clear you have an existing keli and you wanted to fix it. You had a shita teva or migdal and you're having him fix it. So Amar Rav Asi by Shonu al Shonosan lechorosh shita teva or migdal linutz behen masmer. We're talking about in the second case of the Mishnah, says Rav Asi, when you gave him a shita teva or migdal, a carriage or a box or a cabinet, whatever, in order to put a nail into it, meaning you're not asking him to fix the whole thing. You're just asking him to add one little thing to it, one nail or something. And then he was putting the nail into it, and then he broke them. So the point is, in other words, there's no shvach. We can't say that now the keli is worth more because of this thing. Therefore, we can't. Now we have a concept which we're going to be discussing throughout the Gemara over here, which we also had in Kiddushin, called Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli. When a craftsman makes something, is he Koine the Keli through the Shvach that he's adding to it? You have a typical case, for example, in the case we said before, you give him wood to make a Keli, or you give him a Keli and he does a significant improvement to it, we could say that he's Koine that Keli through the shvach, that now that he made the shvach in it, that's considered that now he's coin of the keli, and therefore that would have implications as far as what he pays if he damaged it afterwards. But here, sort of, Asi is saying that we're talking about there's no shvach here to talk about in the first place, because all it is before it was a cabinet, and now it's a cabinet that has a nail in it. So there's no shvach for him to acquire it, and therefore now he has to pay for the full value of the cabinet because he broke it. Avol nosan lachorash etzim, but Rav Asi says if he had given wood to a carpenter, lasis shita teva omigdal, to make a shita teva omigdal, the osimahan shita teva omigdal, and the guy did in fact make the shita teva omigdal out of them, the shibron, and only afterwards did he break them. Potter, then he would be potter from paying the value of an entire keli. Then he would only have to pay the value of the wood that he was given in the first place. My timer, uman koine b'shvach kli, because says Rav Asi, the craftsman is acquiring the material through the shvach that he's putting into it. So now all he's paying for is the raw material, the wood. So in other words, in effect, when we learned this in Kiddushin, Rashi explained over there, in effect, when we say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, what it means is, at this point, before he gives it to the owner and the owner pays him for it, at this point, he owns it. Now, what he's doing basically is that he's selling that Shvach to the owner in return for the owner, the one who gave him the job to do in the first place, is paying him, and with that, he's buying from him the Keli and the Shvach. So you have within that you have a machlokas rishonim. Is he koina the entire shvach? Is he only koina the amount that would be the amount that he's going to be paid? But whatever the point is, I know, and also whether he's koina the guf of the keli itself or only the shvach. There are various machlokas in this. But the point is, in other words, Rav Asi is saying the basic point: uman koina b'shvach kli. So therefore, in that case, then you can't be mechayev him if you had given him if you had given him a box or a cabinet or whatever to fix and he or to make out of scratch and he broke it, you can't say that now he should be chayev to pay for the entire cabinet because he was koined at this point. So all you can make him pay for is the wood that he received for it. Well, the Gemara says Tanan, the first part of our Mishnah says Nosan la'umnin v'kilkalu. If he gave it to a craftsman and they wound it, chayev and l'shalem, then they have to pay. My love, the Yohiv who ates him. Now, Bapashtos, isn't that first case of the Mishnah talking about where he gave them wood? And in that case, we're still saying that the Chayev to pay Chayov and Lashalem implies that the Chayev to pay the value of the entire Keli, not like Rav Asi is saying. And the answer is Loi. Shida Teva or Migdal. No, it means that in the first case of the Mishnah also, he gave them a Shida Teva or Migdal to fix. Yeah, but the second case of the Mishnah talks about that. Miklal de Resha ate him. Doesn't that mean that in the Resha we're talking about that he gave him only wood? Amri, so they answer back. That's not a question. That's not a question. Perushi kamefarish law. You could say that the second case of the Mishnah explains the first one. Ketzad, meaning the second case, is saying, how would it be when we say in the beginning of the Mishnah that if he gave something to a craftsman and to fix it and he ruined it, then he's chayav. What is the case would be that ketzad nosim la'umnan with kilkul chayav and l'shalom kegoyin shenosim l'chora shita teva omigdol is only when he gave them a shita teva omigdol, but if he gave them just pieces of wood, then we would have Rav Asi's din that they're not in fact chayav to pay the whole thing. They just have to return him the value of the wood. And if the wooden pieces themselves are still usable, then they would take them apart and they would give him the pieces of wood. The point of this Uman Koinim Shvach Kli, the Rashba makes the point, because in other words, the Uman, of course, he wants to make the thing and give it to the owner and get paid. That's what he does for a living. He doesn't want to be chayev in it to the extent, he doesn't want to be responsible for it to the extent that he should actually be chayev for a nezek like that. So he kind of figures I'll keep it for myself, unless if the owner is willing to pay me for it, then I'll give it to him. Anyway, so the Gemara is saying, so in order not to contradict Rav Asi, we can understand that the Mishnah is saying the second case is explaining the first. So it's not two different cases, one where he gave him wood and one where he gave him a finished shita teva or migdol, but both of them are talking about the same case. One is explaining the other. Tosfos points out in that case the Gemara could have asked, then why did it say Chayovin L'Shalom in the first part of the Mishnah? Okay, Tosfos says sometimes the Gemara will be Medayak on that, sometimes not. Anyway, the Gemara says Hachinami Mistabra, V'Hachinami Mistabra. In fact, it's more logical to say the Ketzad Katoni, that the Mishnah is meaning to explain rather than to give a new case, if you were going to think that in the Reisha he actually gave him wood, then why would it need to even tell us both cases? Hashdash mean an Eitzim Chayav and L'Shalem, if even when he gave him wood, we would say he's Chayav to pay the full value of a Keli, V'loyam mean an Uman Koine B'Shvach Kelim, and we wouldn't say that the craftsman himself acquired it by the improvement that he made, Shida Tevo Migdol Miboya, would you have to tell us even in the case of Shida Tevo Migdol, there's no chiddush in it, because obviously then there's a keli already that he should have to pay for. So doesn't that prove that yes, we're not talking about two separate cases, we're talking about one case, Nosim La'uman L'Sakin, and what do we mean by that? We gave him a Shida Tevo Migdol, as opposed to we gave him only wood, and then we would say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, and we would say he doesn't have to pay the full value of the keli. However, the Gemara says imi shum halay irya. No, because if that's going to be your proof from the Mishnah, then that's not really a solid proof. You could say the other way around. Tona sefer la galuya reisha. On the contrary, you could say the Mishnah is in fact talking about two cases: one where he gave him wood and one where he gave him a shita teva omigdol. And you would say tona sefer la galuya reisha. He's teaching the sefer only in order to clarify the reisha. Meaning not like we said as ketzad, as in to explain that it's the same case, but rather to clarify that the first case is in fact a different one. Shaloi toima reisha shida teva omigdol. Don't think that in the reisha it's only when he gives him a shida teva omigdol ava eitzim loy, but not if he gave him wood, because you're going to think to say like Rav Asi. No, tana sefer shida teva omigdol. No, therefore the sefer would actually mention the case of shida teva omigdol, implying miklal de reisha eitzim, implying that no, in the first case of the Mishnah, it is in fact talking about giving him wood vafilo hochi chayev l'shalom. And nevertheless, he'd be chayev to pay. So you could learn both ways. You could learn that the Mishnah is saying he gave him l'sakin to fix, and what is that case, namely when he gave him a shita teva omigdol, and then it's only one case, and that would be like Rav Asi. But we could also equally well learn the Mishnah, he gave him wood, and then also he gave him a shita teva omigdol, and the fact that it says the second case is to clarify that the first one is talking about giving him wood, and we would not say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, not like Rav Asi. Okay. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara is going to assume that Rav Asi's statement is accepted by everybody. We may not be able to prove it solidly from the Mishnah, but nevertheless, the Gemara is going to assume in the continuation of the Sugya that most, if not all, of the Chachamim agree with that point. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Can we say that we can support what Rav Asi is saying based on the next Mishnah, which we're going to have on Kuf Amud Beis? And Noisin Semel Saba, if a person gives wool to a dyer to dye for him, the hikdichoy yora, and the vat in which he boils up his dyes. got ruined. So to be exact, actually, the Dicha Yoda means Rashi says Niskalkalat Seva Me'atzmoi, the dye got ruined because it was overcooked, and now therefore the wool is ruined. The wool was the wool is ruined because he overcooked the dyes. Noisin Lid made Samurai. So then the Mishnah says over there that the dyer has to pay him the value of his wool. Implying Dmeit Samri in Dmeit Samri Vashiv Chaloi. So he has to pay him the value of his wool, but the implication is he doesn't have to pay him the value of the wool plus the shvach. The fact is, before it was overcooked in there, before it was left in there and heated up too long, it had been dyed, it would have been worth more. Shouldn't we assume that it means that even if he overcooked it after it fell in, after he put it in, meaning, in other words, so he put in the wool, usually it's supposed to stay there, let's say, for usually it's supposed to stay in there for 10 minutes on a temperature of 200. Instead, he left it in there for 15 minutes on a temperature of 300. Meanwhile, there came a point where it was properly dyed. Then afterwards, it got damaged by being in there too long. So then at one point, there was a shvach there. And then still the Mishnah is saying that he pays only for the wool. So you would see from that that he is kona. What would happen is when he dyed the wool to begin with, when it reached the point when it had absorbed the dye correctly, then at that point the uman is kona it. And normally what would happen is then at that point he'd take it out of there and he would tell the person, your wool is finished, come pick it up. And then he pays him and he's selling him the wool together with the shvach. And that's how it works. But here we would say, because it got wound, we would say uman kone b'shvach kli. We would say therefore that he was kone the wool. So therefore all his chayev is the value of the original raw wool. So that would prove Rav Asi's point of uman kone b'shvach kli. Omar Shmuel, but Shmuel says maybe not necessarily. We could be talking about when he first put the wool in, right away it got ruined. So then there's no shvach to talk about. So therefore, then uman kodev a shvach kli is not going to be relevant. But if it had in fact had a shvach and only then got ruined, then maybe we would say that then we could say that indeed he would pay for the wool plus the shvach. But the Mishnah is not necessarily. The Mishnah is not necessarily addressing that case. The Gemara asked, "Avolik dicha la'achan afila mai noisin lid meit samri v'shiv chay." So, what are you telling me then? The implication of what Shmuel is saying is that if it had gotten wound after it was dyed properly, then he would taka pay him the value of the wool and the value of the shvach. Leima Shmuel, less le did Rav Asi. Does that mean that Shmuel disagrees with what Rav Asi says? Because here Rav Asi, fine, we tried to use that, we're trying to use that Mishnah as a proof to Rav Asi, and we're trying to use that Mishnah as a proof to Rav Asi. And here Shmuel is dafka going and understanding the Mishnah in a different case. And Rashi points out precisely because now, in other words, you could always ask, what forces Shmuel to assume that it's talking about that it got ruined as soon as it fell in, as soon as it was placed in? Why would we have to assume that? The fact that he doesn't want to explain the Mishnah more straightforwardly, that would imply that he disagrees with Rav Asi. And Rashi adds, since the halacha is like Shmuel in dinim momentus, that would necessarily mean the halacha is not like Rav Asi, that uman kodeh b'shvach kli. So is that necessarily so? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Because you know what, the Mishnah could be talking about a case where the Mishnah could be talking about a case where not only the wool but also the dye belongs to the balabas. Many times you're going to have, you go to a dyer, he has a stock of dyes, and he goes And so you give him the wool, he supplies the dye, and he supplies the work to dye the wool. But you could have instead where you yourself are giving him the wool and the dye, and all he's doing is doing the work. So Shmuel says the Mishnah could be talking about that. But Saba Ago Yadehu to Shokil. So then in that case, the dyer, all that he's collecting for when he's getting paid is only for the schar for his tircha. So it's not really like an uman. An uman is more where is more like a contractor. You're giving him a job to do, and he uses his own materials and his own labor and everything. Here, it's entirely your materials. So in that case, then that would be why he's only paying. So in that case, that would be what the Mishnah is implying, that if now, when he put it into the dye, it immediately got ruined, then he's going to pay. Then he's going to pay the value of the wool plus the shvach. But had it been that it was first dyed properly and only then got ruined, then we would say umen kodem shvach kli. So in that case, Shmuel can be understanding the Mishnah in a different way than we understood it to begin with. But nevertheless, it doesn't contradict Rav Asi, and therefore we can still say that Shmuel agrees that Shmuel agrees with Rav Asi. Because again, in other words, the point is, umen koinim shvach kli is not really relevant in this case, because that would only apply to an umen who's supplying his own raw materials, and here he's not. You're supplying the dye as well. Now, Tosfos points out that the Gemara at this point could ask, well, what forces Shmuel to explain that the Mishnah is talking davka about such a case? Why doesn't he explain it more straightforwardly? But anyway, the Gemara is going to ask a better question. The Rashba makes a different point. He says that you could say it is very normal. That you yourself who want to have the wool dyed are going to supply the dye as well. And then he said the second possibility, as Tosfos says, that the Gemara is going to ask a better question. So the question is, Ihochi noisen leidmet samer v'sammonin mibarilei. Well, the question is, in that case, if the owner of the wool is supplying the dye as well, and now we're saying the whole thing got ruined, then the dyer shouldn't just be paying for the wool; he should be paying for the dye as well. Nele, if we're talking about that the dyer himself supplied the dye, okay, so then that's his loss, that the dye now is unusable because he used it on this wool and it turned out that the wool got ruined. So therefore, there's nothing to talk about paying for the dye. We can only talk about the wool, and we can talk about the shvach, and we have this discussion over here. But if you're saying that the owner himself supplied the summonim, the dyes as well, well, then in that case, the Mishnah should be saying that if it got ruined, the dyer is paying for the wool as well as the summonim. So you're right, the Gemara says, El Shmuel dechuya kamad chilei. You're right, Shmuel is only trying to push it off. He's just trying to say that there are different ways of understanding the Mishnah, and not necessarily does it support what Rav Asi is saying. You could understand it in a way that supports Rav Asi, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that way. Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. A Braisa says, now we have the concept, which we're going to learn about in Bava Metzia. Several months from now, Be'ez Hashem, near the end of Bava Metzia, we have the concept of lois solin, bal tolin, that when you hire a worker, you have to pay him on time. In Bava Metzia, we'll learn the details over there of exactly when you have to pay him and so on and so forth. It was actually in Shloisha Perakim of Rambam a couple of days ago. Anyway. So now this braisa talks about a particular din in that. So Toshma, hanosin talisa l'uman, if a person gave his talis to a craftsman to clean for him, for example, we're going to talk about, so he's giving it, let's say, to a dry cleaner, or to a laundry man, or it got ripped and he's giving it to him to sew up or whatever. When the person finished it and he informed the owner that it's ready to come pick up, so now, even 10 days later, even if the owner hasn't picked it up yet and paid, he's not actually over at that point on the issue of lois solin, of not paying on time, because he's not chayev yet, because the person, the laundryman he gave it to, is holding on to that clothing as a mashkin. And loisolin doesn't apply in that case. And there are different other explanations why exactly he's not over. But anyway, the point is that the point is that he's not yet over on loisolin. So even though the guy finished the work because you haven't picked it up yet, therefore you're not over yet. But nosnaloi. But if the person gave you the keli b'chatzia yoim in the middle of the day, kibben shoshok ol v'chama, then if sunset comes and you haven't paid him yet, over ol mishum baltolin, then at that point you are over on baltolin because at that point you didn't pay him on time. Because at that point you didn't pay him on time on the day that he finished the work. Now. So we'll learn about this in more detail in Bava Metzia, Bess Hashem. But anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying, if you're going to tell me, like Rav Asi, that the Uman has already acquired the Keli with the improvement he made to it, then there's no Baltolin, because the Uman himself owns the Keli at this point. In effect, like we said before, when he's finished with it, then he's selling it to the owner. Well, the owner is not over on Baltolin if he doesn't come and buy it in time. So there's no baltolin. Wouldn't that show not like Rav Asi then, that it's not a matter of that it's not a matter of umen koine b'shvach kli? The owner himself owns the keli the whole time, and therefore he hired this guy to do a job for him. And therefore, if he picks it up and doesn't pay him in time, then he's over on baltolin. So that would prove not like Rav Asi. So the Gemara says Omer of Mori Breder of Kahana begauda de sarvala. Because no, we can be talking about over here. We can say umen koni b'shvach kli, but the Braisa is talking about a specific case about a person whose job it is to comb the clothing. So there's no real shvach, the lack of shvach. So there's no shvach. So therefore, you can't really talk about umen koni b'shvach kli. In fact, Rashi in the Gemara in Bava Metzia points out, in a way, the combing, it shortens the life of the beggar. You want to comb it because you want the beggar to look nice and neat, but nevertheless, the fact is it does shorten the life of the beggar, so therefore, in that sense, you can't say there's a shrach. The Gemara says, so for my yavan niale, after all, though, why'd you give it to the guy to do that? Lurakuchi, it must be because the beggar was too stiff, and you want him to comb it, and thereby to soften it. Well, kibben de rakhe hainu shvacha. So therefore, he softened it. There's your shvach. Okay, it's going to shorten the life of the beggar. Nonetheless, though, it's more comfortable, it's softer and warmer that way. So therefore, there is a shvach in it. What we mean is, in other words, so Rashi, the word that Rashi uses over here for gauda de sarabla, the word that Rashi used, flokir, means like you have, let's say, you think of like a sweater or like a fleece jacket or whatever, where you have over time, the lining of it has gotten flattened out. Now you're having him like fluff it up. You're having him kind of like comb it in order to fluff it up, so that now it'll be more fluffy and warm. So it does shorten the life of it, but nevertheless, it makes it softer and warmer, and now you want to wear it. So therefore, there is a shvach. And the answer is fine. The Gemara says, Loit Sricha, yes, but the case that the Braisa had to talk about, Baltolin, is where, so not necessarily we're talking about as far as fluffing it up, but rather we're talking about as far as the process of laundering it, De Agre Levitchi. He hired the guy to trample on the clothing. Part of the process of washing clothing back then involved that you would trample on it. It was sort of like the equivalent of nowadays when you wash clothing in a washing machine and you have the spin cycle to get as much water out as possible. So that would have been the equivalent back then. We find actually in the Pesukim, we find here and there that a place where they do laundry, for example, there was a place near Yerushalayim where people regularly did laundry, and it was called Ein Roigil, which means the spring of the foot people. And Rashi explains over there that in fact it was called that because, as we're saying over here, laundry, people who are doing laundry, one of the part of the process of cleaning the clothing would be to trample on them, to step on them. Anyway, so now we're talking about that he hired the guy to do that kind of thing, bitcha, b'ma'osa, and the deal was every step that he puts on it, the owner is going to pay him a ma. So now, therefore, so he's not a kablon. Until now, we were talking about a kablon, which is where you're giving a person a job to do, and you're paying him for the entire job. The difference is you have schiros and you have kablonos. We'll learn about it extensively in Bav Metzia, Be'ez Hashem. A socher is you're paying him by the hour or by the day or whatever it is. A kablon, you're paying him by the job. So till now, when we were talking about Uman Koni B'Shvach Kli, we're talking about when you're paying him by the job. You give him wood to make a keli, as we discussed before, or you're giving him wool to dye or whatever. You don't care how little or how long he takes, time he takes over the project. You're not paying him by the hour. He himself, obviously, when he's calculating his fee, he's going to figure out approximately how many hours it typically takes him, but you're not actually expecting him to fill out a timesheet. Nowadays, you have many examples like that. You give something to the dry cleaner, you're not expecting him to fill out a timesheet of how long he took over the job. You pay him, he has a fixed price that for a suit it costs X amount, and for a talus it costs X amount, and so forth. As opposed to a socher, is you're paying him by the hour or by the day or whatever unit of time. So now we're talking about you're paying him for each step that he makes on this clothing as he's washing it, then you're paying him a ma for that. So you can't say that he's koine b'shvach, dehainu schirus, the Gemara says. So you're doing it as schirus rather than as kablonus. So now we can talk about the issue of loisolin, the issue that you're not allowed to delay paying him. So that would be the case that the Braisa is talking about. Tosfos asks that in that case, the fact is that still maybe you would consider him a kablon in that case. Rather, Tosfos brings from Rashi in that Gemara in Bava Metzia, where it talks about these dinim, that agra labitchi means, in other words, that when you first had a piece of clothing made, it comes from the weaver. Then what you do is the first thing you need to do is wash it in order to stiffen it up a little bit. The fact is you want it to be soft to wear, but on the other hand, you want it to have a certain stiffness and a certain body to it. So you hire somebody to fill up a keli full of water, and then you put the clothing into that. And you bang or step on it over there in the water. So that would be a schirus, because really, whether he's going to improve it or not, you pay him according to the amount of work he's putting into it. You're paying him, as the Gemara said, bitcha bitcha b'ma. You're paying him for each blow. You're paying him a ma. So it's not a matter of whether there's shvach or not. You hired him to do a job, and regardless of whether it actually brought about a shvach in the clothing, you're still going to be obligated to pay him. And therefore, we're saying that once you picked up the keli, then the Baal Tolan clock starts ticking. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that maybe we could be talking about when you're hiring him by the blow, when again, each step, each punch or whatever that he does to the keli, he's going to get a ma for that. Then the very first one he does, there's no shvach yet, and nevertheless he still needs to be paid for that one. So that one, now we could say that Baal Tolan would apply specifically to that. So a couple of different ways of explaining what the case is exactly with this that he hired him, as the Gemara is saying, Levitchi, that he hired him in order to trample on or give blows or whatever to the garment in order to improve it. But nevertheless, So again, Rashi is saying over here, he's only a schir yom, he's not a kablon, therefore Baal Tolan doesn't apply. Rashi in Bava Metzia is saying, because we're talking about that he's being paid whether there was a shvach or not, and the Yesh Mefoshim in Tosfos is saying because you have to pay him already for the first blow that he did, even though there's no shvach yet. Okay, so the point is, Rav Mori Breder Kahane is saying that Braisa is not talking about a case where there's shvach keli to be able to pay him for, and therefore you can't show from there whether Uman Koine b'shvach kli or not. Well, the Gemara says, well, my the solak adaitin meikra deloy agri lebitchi. Well, if we follow our original assumption that it wasn't that he hired him specifically to trample on the clothing, but he did it with kablonus, he's paying him for the job as a whole rather than the individual details that he did into it. If we learn like that and we say that then there's no Baal Tolan, only when he hired him for bichi, only when he hired him to do one for each blow, he's going to pay him Messiah, Leila Rav Sheshes. That would support what Rav Sheshes says. The Bomi name Rav Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes, Kablonus, over all of Mishum Baltol, and ain't over. So if a person is doing kablonos, so schirus, the pasuk clearly says that that you chayav on baltolin if you don't pay in time when you hire the worker by the day, by the hour or the day or what have you. But what about kablonos when you're paying him by the job? Is there baltolin in that connection? But amalahu Rav Sheshes over, and Rav Sheshes says yes, a person is over. So the way that we just understood. When we brought this braisa and we said it seems to contradict Rav Asi, and we assumed to begin with that we're talking about a regular case of kablonos, you gave your talus to a dry cleaner to clean or whatever, then we're saying that umen koine b'shvach, then we're saying that you're not over on baltolin, or you are over on baltolin once you picked it up, because now if we said umen koine b'shvach kli, that wouldn't work. Because then he's selling it to you, then there's no job involved, but rather a sale. And we said that wouldn't that contradict Rav Asi? And we had to explain the braisa differently. If we follow our original assumption, then that would support what Rav Sheshes says. Well, in that case, Leiman Rav Sheshes pligad Rav Asi. Does that mean in turn that Rav Sheshes disagrees with Rav Asi and doesn't hold of Umen Koine B'Shvach Kli? Because after all, if he's saying that with a kablon, you're also over, Rav Sheshes was saying that you are over on baltolin with a kablon, which would mean, in other words, so therefore that's in effect. We're saying that the woman is not koine b'shvach kli. Therefore, it's not a matter of that he's selling the beggar to you. It's a matter of that you owe him for his work, and therefore baltolin would apply. The answer is Omer of Shmuel Ba'acha b'shlicha de'igarta. No, because when Rav Sheshes is talking about a kablon that you chayev to pay him, and if not, then you're over on Baltacher. He's talking about you're over on Baltolin. He would be talking about specifically a kind of kablonus where you're hiring him for the job, for example, to carry a letter from point A to point B. So that kind of kablonus, there's no shvach in it. Therefore, we can't talk about umen koine b'shvach kli. But on the other hand, when there is shvach involved, then maybe Rav Sheshes would agree that baltolin wouldn't apply because then umen koine b'shvach kli, and then you would say, in effect, it's not so much that you owe him the money, it's rather that he wants to sell this beggar to you and collect his fee. The Gemara says, Lema Katanoi. Should we say this whole question of Umen Koine B'Shvach Kli is actually a Machlokas Tanoi? Because we learned in Kedushin, a Braisa, if a woman says to a man, Aseli Shedim Nizomim Taboys, make for me out of the material that I'm going to give you, make for me bracelets or earrings or finger rings, that Kodesh Loch, and I will be Makodesh to you for the work that you're doing for me. So does that work? Is that valid kiddushin? Kiven shason mekudeshes. Once he makes this jewelry, then she is mekudesh to him. Divrei Meir. That's what a Meir says. V'chamim enim mekudeshes ad she'agiyah mamon liyada. And the Chum say she's mekudeshes only when money reaches her hands. So what does that mean? So we have to figure my mammon. What mammon are we talking about? Ilema oise mammon. Do we mean that only when he gives her the actual tachshitin? What Mikhlal did a mayor sava oisem mammon loy? What would that mean? And a mayor would hold that she's mekudesh even if he doesn't give her the rings or whatever. Ela b'mayim mekadesha. Well, then what's she going to be mekudesh with? She said, "Make for me these rings," and that obviously means give it to her. So if he doesn't give it to her, Rabbi Meir can't possibly be saying Mekudeshes. Tosfos points out now the Gemara could have why don't we say that maybe she's Mekudesh with Hanoas Mechilas Milva, which we learned about in Kedushin. At this point, she owes him money for making this jewelry for her. Now he's Mechol for it to her, and then we could say that she's Mekudeshes for that. Still, Tosfos says no, that we can assume, since she said to begin with that she wants to be that she wants him to make this jewelry for her, she's not going to agree to be Mekudesh to him until the jewelry actually comes to her hand. So there wouldn't just be enough Hanos Mechilas Milva, it would have to be that it comes to her hand, and how would Rameyer say any different? And then Tosfos goes on to discuss and brings from the Ri. Now, no, even if they both want the Kedushin to be Chal before that, it won't work because yesh na v'schiros mitchilu v'ad soif, because every little bit of work that he does earns him a little bit more of a schiros, and at the end you only have and therefore he hasn't really given her anything until he actually finishes the job, and then he has a schiros which he can collect even in Beis Din if necessary, and then we can talk about hanos mechilas milva, but not before that. So that would imply, in other words, that she had to have actually picked up the jewelry. Anyway, so lachora then we have to be talking about. So we can't be talking about oisei mammon, the actual jewelry itself. My moment acher. Obviously, we have to be talking about that. That Reb Meir and the Chachamim are arguing that when the Chachamim say only when Yagia moment the yada, we mean we have to be talking about some other money, a pruta separately. Now the savrua. Now when we bring in this question, the Chachmei Yeshiva assumed. Everybody would agree that, as we just said, as Tosfos had pointed out, that it means that she first becomes chayev to pay him only when he finishes the job. Every little bit of work that he does, he's chayev. He's owed more and more of the schirus, and she's chayev to pay it for him. And therefore, in other words, as soon as he does a pruta's work, she's chayev in a pruta, and therefore it becomes a milva. And as we learned in Kedushin, amakadosh milva ainim akudeshes, or dekula amu, that would be the second one, or dekula amu amakadosh milva ainim akudeshes. Everybody would agree that if you makadosh with a loan, then it's not a valid kedushin because no money is actually reaching her hands right now. As we learned in kedushin, milva lahitzah nitna, milva is meant to be spent, and therefore you can't say that she can be makadosh now with what he gave her earlier. And then my labor umen kone b'shvach kli kamiflegi. Well, in that case, wouldn't we say then that the machlokas of Reb Meir and the Chachamim is on this point of umen kone b'shvach kli? When can we say that? Can we say that when he gives her the jewelry, she's mekudesh with the fact that he owned that shvach and he gave it to her? And then Reb Meir would say that's acceptable, and the Chum would say that no, woman is not kone b'shvach kli. She owns this jewelry. Therefore, when he gives it to her, he's not actually giving her anything that she didn't have before, and therefore he'd have to give her a separate peruta. So if we understand like that, so my lab go umen koni b'shvachli kamifli. Did a mayor sava umen koni b'shvachli, but Rabbanan Sabri ain't umen koni b'shvachli. So that would be the machlokas whether he acquired that jewelry by making it. So the mayor would hold that he does. Therefore, it's considered his jewelry that he's giving her. Now she owes him money for it. That's another matter. But the point is, he's giving her something that he owned before, the jewelry which he was koinah with the shvach, and therefore that's a valid condition. And the chum would say that he's not koinah b'shvach kli. It was never his in the first place. Therefore, he needs to give her another prota. So in that case, then this point of omen koinah b'shvach kli that Rav Asi was saying is actually subject to a machlokas tanoim. But the Gemara says loy, not necessarily. The kula alma ain uman kone b'shvach kli. We could say everybody agrees that the uman is not kone with the shvach of the keli. Ela hocha b'yeshna v'schiros mitchil v'ad soif kamiflegi. The machlokas would be about that point of yeshna v'schiros mitchil v'ad soif. Would we say that every time he does a pruta of malacha, he's owed at that point a pruta, or would we say that he's chai, and therefore it becomes a milva, and we said you can't be makadish for the milva, or would we say that no, the schirus is payable only at the end? Reb Meir sava ein l'schirus elo l'vasoiv. Reb Meir would hold the schirus only kicks in at the end, only when he gives it to her. Therefore, it's not a milva. Up until now, she didn't owe him anything. Now at this point, she owes him money. She owes him the lump sum for making this jewelry. And now, instead, he's telling her, you keep it, and that'll be the kedushin. So then that'll work, because that's not a milva. Whereas the Chachamim would hold that the schirus becomes it mounts up over time. Then it mounts up over time, and therefore every time that he does a pruta's worth of work, it becomes she owes him that amount. That becomes a milva. Then we have another pruta is added to the milva, and so on and so forth, until we get to the point where at the end there's not a shava pruta, and therefore there's no kedushin over here. So the machlokas could be on that, but they could both agree that that ain uman koin of a shvach kli. We could say they both disagree with Reb Meir. Another way of looking at it, the boys ema We could instead say that everybody agrees that Yeshnava Schiris Metchila Bad Soif, every time he does a pruta's worth of work, there's a pruta that he's owed at that point. The machlokas could be on the very fact of whether you can be Makadish with a loan. Did a mayor sava Makadish Milva Makadeshis, but a bonnet sabre Makadish Milva ain't Makadeshis? So the machlokas would just be whether you can use a Milva to be Makadish with or not. So exactly that. And there is a milva over here because each time he did a pruta's worth of work, she owes him that pruta. But nevertheless, your mayor would say that's fine. He can be mekadesh her with that, even though the money is not right away, even though the money is not now is not now available. Tosfos actually points out that the Gemara in Kedushin says that if there was nothing left of it, then she wouldn't be Mekodeshes, because not Be'ain. So how would it work over here? Tosfos wonders. Because the fact is over here right now, there's no actual money left, because again, he did less than a pruta's worth of work at the end. So therefore, how could there be Kedushin? So Tosfos leaves the question open. Different other Rishonim discuss different angles on this exactly. How do we say Hamakadosh Milva is Mekudeshes? One thing that comes into play over here is a mashkin. So here he didn't receive the thing as a mashkin. So the bottom line is, in other words, that the bottom line is we don't have to assume that they're arguing on Oman Koine B'Shvach Kli. We could say that they're arguing on a Mekadesh B'Milva, and you have the different permutations of that, when that would work and when not. Rava Amar, and Rava gives another answer. D'kula Amar Yeshna L'Schiros Metchila V'Ad Soif. Everybody would agree that Yeshna L'Schiros Metchila V'Ad Soif. So every time he does a pruta's worth of work, he's owed another pruta. Or D'kula Amar Mekadesh Milva Ein Mekudeshes. Everybody would agree that a milva is not a valid method of kedushin, because there has to be some object that he gives her right now, and you don't have that. Furthermore, we could say that they both disagree with Rav Asi, and they both say that the Uman is not Kona Bishvachli, that we would say that he's not Kona with the improvement he made to the Kaili. Therefore, the Kaili was hers the whole time. So then in that case, why does her mayor say that she's Mekudeshes? Because we could be talking about that she gave him the gold to make the jewelry, for example, and he added a Neufech, which is a type of precious or semi-precious stone of his own. So now he wants to be Mekadesh with that. Reb Meir Sava, Milva Pruta, Daita Pruta. So Reb Meir holds, if you want to be Mekadesh a woman with a Milva, as well as you're going to give her a Pruta, then he has in mind the Pruta, and therefore she's Mekadesh with that. But Rabbanan Savri, Milva Pruta, Daita Milva. Now Chum say that no, primarily her Das is that she's going to be Mekadesh with the Milva, and a Mekadesh Milva, and a Mekodeshes. And therefore, the kedushin is no good. We learned about this in kedushin. We talked about that there was the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that this ended up being a machloikas between David and Shaul. Shaul had said that whoever defeats Goliath, among other things, is going to get a large amount of money from the king, and is also going to marry the king's daughter. David wanted to be Mekadesh Merav, Shaul's oldest daughter, based on that. Turns out it's a milva, it doesn't work because Shaul owes him the money, and a Mekadesh milva and a Mekudeshes. So then he tried again with Michal, and Shaul tells him, you have to bring me Meya Orlis Plishtim, 100 Orlis from you're going to kill 100 Plishtim and bring me their Orlis. And David did that. In fact, he brought 200. And then the Gemara says, one way of understanding the fact is Shaul held there was no valid Kedushin because he held milva pruta, daita pruta, that the intention still is to be Mekadesh with the milva, which is still outstanding, and not with the pruta, which is the hundred or two hundred orlas, and therefore it's not a valid kedushin. Whereas David held that milva pruta daita pruta, like we're saying over here, that Rameo would hold. Okay. So in any case, the point is that therefore the machlokas Reb Meir and the Chachamim is not necessarily connected with the whole matter of Uman Konim Shvach Kli. We could say that the Uman is not Kone B'Shvachkli, so not like Rav Asi, and nevertheless, we can still understand the Machlokas as talking about where he added something extra to the jewelry. And the Gemara points out it would plug to Dani Tanoi, in which case then the Machlokas of Rav Meir and the Chachamim would be exactly the same as another Machlokas Tanoim, because we have the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, a man says to a woman, Hareat Mekudeshesli, B'Schar Shal Sisi Imach, for the payment of the work that I did for you, Einam Kodeshus. That wouldn't work because that would be a milva because he already did the work before. So he had already done the work before. So therefore, that would be a classic case of milva. Rashi points out that actually it would have to be we'd have to be talking about once he returned it to her already. Then we, when we say Einol Aschirus El Lavasoif, like we said before, once he gave her the thing he made, then it's not considered a milva. But here we're talking about that he already finished the work for her, so therefore it's considered a milva. B'schar she'es imach, but if he says for the schar of the malacha that I'm going to do for you, mekudeshes, then that would work. Once he gives her one, once he finishes the work and gives her the thing, then we can say she's mekudeshes. because we don't say there's a milva over here, because we say that only when he finishes the job, only then is he chay of his schar, and now at that point that she's keeping that, then that's not a milva, that's mechilas milva, and that would work. Rab Nosson says no. V'schar she'ese imach enim akudeshes. Even when he says for the schar of what I will do work for you is also enim akudeshes, because he holds yeshan l'schiros mitchil avad soif, and therefore every pruta becomes a milva. V'cholshken v'schar shal sisi imach. And Rab Nosson says all the more so if he says for the schar of what I already did for you, for sure that wouldn't work. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, Be'emes Amru, in truth they said, which the Gemara elsewhere says, that whenever it says Be'emes Amru, means the halacha l'moshe Mi-Sinai, although, since we know that the Rambam points out, Chacham can't argue on a halacha l'moshe Mi-Sinai, then therefore we'd have to understand that Rebbe means it's not literally halacha l'moshe Mi-Sinai, but it's a well-known halacha, he says, disagreeing with the other two Tanoim. Either way, she's not mekudeshes, like Rav Nosson said. But if he added a noifach of his own, then she would be mekudeshes, because we would say milvo pruta daita pruta. So it comes out then that Rav Nosson. Now Rav Nosson, meanwhile, doesn't agree with that because he didn't mention that point. So Rav Nosson would hold like the Chachamim before. Rav Nosson would hold like the Chacham before that even Hosef la Noifech Mishaloi wouldn't work. Whereas Rav Meir and Rebbe would both hold that if he added the Noifech of his own, then fine. The rest of the work that he did is considered a milva. But now you have the value of this one stone, which is more than a shava prota, and therefore she's mekudeshes with that. So the Gemara asks, "My ikka ben Tanakama l'Rav Nosson? What's the actual machloikus between the Tanakama and Rav Nosson?" The Maharshal takes out the words my ikka, because the Gemara is not really asking what the difference is. The Gemara is going to explain. Bein Tanakama l'Rav Nosson, ikka b'nayu schirus. The argument between the Tanakama and Rav Nosson is about what's the deal with schirus. Is it einam ashtalemes elo l'vasoif? Is it only when he finishes the work, only then he's owed this amount of money and a lump sum? Or is it yeshna l'schirus mitchil avad soif, that every pruta's worth of work he does, she now owes him another pruta, and in that case, it mounts up more and more as a milva. So that would be the machlokas between the Tanakama and Rav Nosson. The Tanakama would say that when he's saying b'schar she'es imach mekudeshes, because he says ein l'schiros elo l'soif, so only when he finishes the job, only then does she owe him the money, and in that case, it's not a milva. Rav Nosson had said that it wouldn't work because he holds that yesh l'schiros mitchil avad soif. And the difference between Rav Nosson and Rav Yehuda Hanasi would be Ikka b'nayu milva or pruta. The machlokas on them would be on this point of milva or pruta, where he's mekadesh with a milva as well as with another pruta. Does that work? So Rav Nosson would hold that no. Therefore, he made her the kalim, where the schiros doesn't help for kedushin because it's a milva. And the Nofach Mishaloi doesn't help either, because she still has in mind the Milva, whereas according to Rebbe, the Nofach Mishaloi would help, because now that's considered a Pruta that she has in mind to be Miskadish with that. So that Mecholikas of Rab Nosson and Rab Yehuda Nosi would be exactly the same as the Mecholikas of Rab Meir and the Chachamim before. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of cases where you give a craftsman or you give somebody a job to do and he messes it up. So now let's talk about more dinim in that connection. Amar Shmuel, Tabach Oman, when you have an expert shochet, shekilko, so you gave an animal to the shochet to shecht it, and he wound the shechita, and now the animal is nevela. Chayev l'shalem. So that shochet is chayev to pay for the animal. Rashi points out, it doesn't mean only an oman, all the more so if you gave it to a hedyot, who's not as expert in shechita, he should say to begin with, I don't know how to do it, don't give me the animal to shecht. And if he tries to anyway and messes it up, he'd have to pay. The chiddush is even an uman, even a person who's an expert at that, nevertheless, if he messes up, you still have to pay. And Shmuel says, mazik hu pesheahu. He's a mazik and he's a pesheya, and therefore nasik omel shchot lemikan v'shachot lemikan. It's the equivalent of the balabos telling him shecht it on one side, and instead he shechted it on a different side. In other words, it was plain carelessness, and therefore he's chayiv to pay. It's the equivalent of telling him, let's say, to tell him shecht it from the front of the neck, and instead he shechted it from the back of the neck, and therefore he's chayev for acting carelessly. In this case, where something happened, where something went wrong during the shechita, so he was mazik. So the Gemara says, lomali the meima mazik hu pesheahu. Why does Shmuel have to mention the point that he's a mazik and a pesheah? And the answer is, Iyom Maziku, if Shmuel had only said the word Maziku, Havamina, Hanimili, Hecha, Dekovid, Beschar, then you would say, you know what, maybe we're only talking about where he's actually being paid for his work, so therefore now he's Chayiv, even Ba'onis. Aval Hecha, Dekovid, Bechinam, but where he's doing it for free, Loi, maybe we could argue he's not Chayiv, because we should argue if he's being paid. He's like a Shomer Socher, and a Shomer Socher is a shomer socher is chayev for certain kinds of things. So, shomer socher is potter for oynes. But here the Rosh points out this kind of oynes over here would actually be kein gneva. It's similar to a gneva because, in other words, he's responsible the shchita itself, which is his job to do. He has to make sure to do properly, and he didn't. You could argue that if he's a shomer chinam is potter for everything except for pshia. So, therefore, if you only said maziku, you wouldn't know that he's chayev. So Kamash Malon, Pesheahu, therefore Shmuel uses the expression that he's a Pesheah, meaning in other words, and therefore even a Shemachinam is Chayim. Now, he could have just said Pesheahu, the Rosh adds that fine, he wants it's Loizu Afzu. Not only is he Pesheah, but he's also a Mazik, and therefore he's Chayim to pay in all cases. The other way around, he says Mazik Pesheahu. So he's saying not only he's a Mazik, but also he's a Pesheya, and therefore he's Chayev, even if he's a Shomer Chinam, even if he's doing it for free. However, the Gemara says, Eisvei Rav Choma Baguria L'Shmuel. Rav Choma Baguria asks Shmuel from a Braisa, Hanosin Behema L'Tabach, a person gives an animal to a Shochet, to Shecht it, V'Nibla, and the guy made it Nevela, he did the Shechita carelessly, Uman Potter. So if he's an Uman, if he's an expert, then he is then he's Potter, because that would be considered an Oynas. Hedyet Chayev, but if he's a regular person who's not so expert at shechting, then it would be Chayev, because then it would be more of a Pshia. Like Rashi said before, he should have realized, why am I going and shechting this animal when I'm not necessarily so expert in knowing what I'm doing. Amalei la'aber moichach. So Shmuel answers Rav Choma Baguria. La'aker moichach, your brain is confused. Meaning, Rashi says, he's like using the expression, Rashi, la'aker, Rashi says, come in my machurim, like cloudy water. In other words, your brain is cloudy, and you're not asking clearly. So what does he mean by, so what does he mean by that? Another one of the Chachmei HaYeshiva. So Shmuel pushed off Rav Choma Baguria, And now another Talmud also came, come Moisiv Leh, and asked him the exact same question. Omale, so Shmuel tells him, Hashla Shaklas, my Bishoko Chavra. Look at that. You're gonna now get the same kind of rebuke that I just gave you, Chavra, Rab Chama Baguya. Don't you realize Kamina Lhuana, Rab Mayor, Bakamritali Rabbanon? I'm telling you a din that would apply appointed a mayor. And you're answering me back with a brisa that gives the opinion of the Chachamim. Amai lo daikus mili shani oimer. Why aren't you medayek from the words that I said? Maziku pashehu, meaning nas and that nasika umala shchot limikan v'shachol limikan. What did I say? That why is he chayev to pay? Because he's a mazik and he's a pashea, and therefore that's the equivalent of telling him shechted on one side and he shechted on the other side. Man islay hay svara. Who is the one, which Tana holds that you have to be that holds of that Svara is Reb Meir. That's going to be Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that a person has to pay attention and be extra careful to not cause a hezek. So therefore, so Shmuel is saying, both Reb Chama Bar Guria and you should have realized that I'm using this exact expression to represent that I'm saying my din only according to the mayor. I'm aware the Chachamim disagree, but I'm saying according to the mayor. So what are you guys bringing me a brisa that's talking about the Chachamim? Different opinion. So that's why I'm saying that. That's why I'm saying this expression, la'akir moichach, your brain is confused, to Reb Chama Bar Guria, and to you, I'm going to say the same thing. So the Gemara says, hey, Reb Meir, which statement of Reb Meir do we find that he holds of that concept that a person has, that an omen has an extra responsibility to make sure that he's not mazik? Ile maho Reb Meir, or you're going to say it's the following statement from Reb Meir, and the Gemara says, the Gemara brings a simon, kolon simon, the simon is going to be the three words, that one is koshroi, litzboya, and nishbara. So Ditanan, we learned earlier in our Masechta, Koshre Baila B'Maseira, if you have a shur that the owner tied up with a bridle, with a horn, with a rope, the knob in front of Karoi, or he locked up the door properly in front of the animal, the yotz of the hezek, and it went out and caused the hezek, Bein Tam Bein Mord Chayev, Divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says whether it was a tam or a mord is chayev, because he's obligated to do extra strong shmira for it. So in that case, we would say that a mayor, so we see from that a mayor says you have to take extra care. No, because you could say, Hosam Makroi Pligi. The machloikas over there is basically about how we douche in the psukim, because we said over there that you have the Pasuk says in this week's parasha by a tam, it says Veloyish, by a muad, actually it says Veloyish Murana Ba'olav, that the owner didn't guard it, and therefore it went out and caused a hezek. And Rameo learns from that it means that both a tam and a muad, you have to have Yishmurenu Ba'olav. And if you didn't do the best possible shmira, then you're still going to be chayim. That has nothing to do with the regular case of whether a person is obligated to take that extra care. So Ella Hora Meir. Rather, we're going to try to learn from another din of Reb Meir, the Tanan. We're going to learn in the next Mishnah. Litzboya like Odin Betzavei Shachar. What if you gave a dyer wool and you told him you want to dye it red, Betzavei Shachar, and instead the guy dyed it black? Shocher with Savai Adam, or the other way around, you wanted him to dye it black and he dyed it red. Reb Meir Omen Noisan Le Dmei Tzamroi. Reb Meir says that the dyer has to pay the value of the wool, and meaning that it was only the value of the wool, not the value of the shvach. The fact is, the dyed wool is worth more than undyed wool. So Reb Meir says that he's koine it like a gazlan, and therefore he's obligated to pay for it. So you could say, why is Reb Meir saying that? Because he has to pay attention and do the exact thing that the Baba Boss said. And if not, then we can consider him a mazik and we can consider him like a gan. The Gemara says that's not really a proof. Hosim biadayim kloy mine, because the difference is that he did it biadayim. We're not talking about we did it accidentally. He deliberately intended to do it differently than what the Baba Boss said. So as opposed to the shofet, there's not meaning to do something wrong. He accidentally shechted the animal wrongly and wounded, but not that he meant to. So that's not a proof from there either that a mayor would be mechayev in the case of the shofet. Ela or a mayor, the Tanan or the Tanya, really it's supposed to be. Rather, we can say it's the following opinion of a mayor that we learned back in the third parak. Nishbara kadev leisilka. If a person's jug broke in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and he didn't remove the broken pieces, or Nafla Gmale V'lo Ha'amida, his camel fell down and he didn't pick it back up, and now it's an obstacle in the road. Remeo Om Chaya B'Niskan, so now if people trip over it, or Kalim, or whatever, if people trip over it and get injured, Rav Meir says he's chayev for the nezek. V'cham and potter medina on mechayev dina shemayim. V'cham says he's potter from dinei odom because the beis din can't make him obligated to pay for it. And but he's chayev dina shemayim. He would have to pay if he wants to escape punishment by Hashem. V'kayim alondem nitka p'sheya hu pligi. And as we learned there in the third parak, the machloikas Rav Meir and the chachamim is on the question of nitka p'sheya when a person walks in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and then he trips and falls. Is he considered a p'sheya? So the Chum hold, he's considered an onus, he's considered an onus, and therefore we said that since he can say, in effect, I didn't create this burr myself, it happened by onus, therefore I'm potter from picking it up, whereas Reb Meir would say that he's considered a pesheya, and therefore he would say, you don't pick it up, then therefore you're chayev for anything that happens because of that. So we see, in other words, that Reb Meir holds that, you have to take extra care, that if a person is not taking enough care, then he's considered a pesheya. So therefore, so Shmuel's din that he said before about the shochet who shechted improperly, then that would be only according to the mayor, who says nitka pesheya, but the chamim who disagree with that concept would also say that when it comes to a shochet, then he's not necessarily chayev unless he meant to do something wrong. Obviously, he's going to be chayev, but otherwise, we would say that it's considered. Otherwise, we would say that if he's an uman, he would be potter because that kind of thing would be considered an oinus, and that's taka how it is because the halacha is like the chachamim against Reb Meir. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue discussing this whole matter of a shoychet who does something wrong and other cases like that involving an uman who messes up and what the dinim are in each of those cases.